Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Leverage Podcast. We've got a really awesome guest today, a guy I've known for a few years now. His name's Gordon Cowie, and he's a music video director, and he just directed his first feature film. And it looks really cool. I saw the trailer on Kickstarter. Or was it Indiegogo? No, it was Kickstarter, right?
No, Kickstarter.
Kickstarter, right. Gordon and I go way back. He's also a studier of social dynamics, dating, attraction, all that stuff. And what I'm really interested to talk to him about is meditation. He's an avid meditator. He's been doing it for 15 years. He'll meditate anywhere from 2 to 5 hours a day. And meditation is something I've recently started, kind of kicking and screaming my way into it, but I figure I need it. So I've got lots of questions for you, Gordon, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. So if you can start by just giving us a little bit of a background, you know, how did you get into personal development and, you know, what's your story has been?
Sure. Yeah. And I'm going to start kind of right from the very beginning. And this is where I believe why I got into self-development was when I was a child. So when I was a kid, I basically went through some traumatic things around 6 or 7 years old, basically walked in on my dad and had found him that he had stabbed my mom. And I basically saw a bunch of blood everywhere, you know, very traumatizing event. And I fainted during this. So, you know, years went on when I got older and stuff like that. And I never knew the effect that had on me. You know, it's like kind of like, okay, this happened to you as a kid. I don't really know what the heck it means. You know, I just saw it as an event that was kind of like shitty that happened in my life. Mm-hmm. And I had no clue really what effect it had on me. Anyways, flash forward around 15, 16, something similar happened to a family member. My sister had gotten kidnapped by a serial rapist. Fuck. And another very, of course, traumatic event for her, you know, very traumatic. And also for me, because I was at the time in a different state. And again, I was about 16. And I was put in a place again where I felt helpless. First situation with my dad, I felt very helpless. And in this situation, I felt helpless. There was nothing I could really do and I was powerless. And so anyways, again, I didn't know really the effect it had. Looking back, I kind of see that it created this environment where I didn't feel safe. Hmm. And like I wasn't taken care of. And of course, I didn't know that. That's just how I was walking around. That was like my mask. You know, I'm like, world's not safe. I'm not taken care of. And, you know, around, I lived
just
in
like
British
running
Columbia
in the event. Background in the whole time,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just mm-hmm. scared. Just
and as a
terrified.
Kid, you don't even probably realize that's kind of going on, right? It's just kind of your natural state of being.
Yeah. No clue at all. Just like, yeah, my natural state of being was terrified, hmm. you know? So didn't really think anything of it, you know, at 13, moved from British Columbia, Vancouver to Arizona. And I think that's kind of where it started to take form mostly because I made all these new friends and, you know, they were all into drugs, you know, being the cool kids, getting into fights, going to parties. So like at 13, we're doing pretty bad things already. We're like spent our
young.
Summer at
13.
Yeah, 13. 13, we're like pretty much growing up in like a meth house, you know, like spending our whole summer there with these adults who all did meth and everyone was doing meth type of thing. And then that progressed to obviously our friends selling drugs and people doing coke, eventually moving up to heroin. And of course, we were like surrounded by violence and all this stuff. And it was just normal. I literally thought it was normal. Like, oh, this is childhood. This is like growing up around your friends. You're always around violence, people getting hurt. People dying,
no
overdosing.
Idea, right? Is this normal
no,
life?
No clue. I thought it was normal life. And I remember years later, like probably around like 26, 27, I'm with this girl and talking to her. And she's telling me about her childhood. And then I told her about my childhood a bit. And she's looking at me with just absolutely shocked. Like looking at me like it's like, what do you, like, she's like, Gordon, this isn't normal. Like, this isn't normal childhood. And like, that's
like, wait, it's not normal to grow up in a meth house at 13. Well, what do you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just like, and she's looking at me just like completely shocked. And I really got it. I'm like, well, wait a minute. You know, like, this isn't how life is. And because like, I thought it was like that because my friends were going through the same thing. And that's who, mm-hmm. you know, you talk to about it, your friends, and they've been through all the similar types of things. And, but anyways, back to around 18, 19, someone handed me a book, you know, it was just a self-development book. It was Way of the Peaceful Warrior, but I don't think it really mattered what book it was at the time because I had no introduction to any type of self-development or like transforming your life, changing your life. And then in this book, you know, I saw life lessons and I really saw for the first time I could change my life. And that kind of like had me start reading everything I could get my hands on, like hundreds of books. And, you know, I could see from like 18 to 24, I kind of, you know, there was definitely growth. You know, I was creating space between me and my friends, like kind of like elevating my life, becoming a better human. But it was still slow. It was slow as hell. Like yeah. It just felt like it was like inching forward. If I look back the 6 years, yeah, I could see tons of progress. And I was still working a job I hated. And doing sales, I'd been doing sales for like 10 years and I just felt stuck. I kind of wanted to act. I was taking classes for that. I wasn't really going anywhere. But anyways, I take this course, this transformation course, and it basically just has you get authentic where you've been inauthentic. And they kind of called me out. They're like, oh, you say you want to accomplish these goals and dreams of yours of being being an actor and, but you're kind of just taking classes here, feeling it. You're planning to save money to move out to LA and, you're playing a very safe game. And if you want to accomplish this big goal and big dream, you need to go all in. Well, and in that, in getting authentic,
was that Landmark, by the way?
Yeah, that was Landmark. Okay. That was a Landmark Education, which is an incredible, absolutely incredible course.
It really yeah, I'm, helps you. I was an introduction leader for Landmark back in the day.
Nice.
So I'm super familiar with the curriculum and yeah, it's changed my life radically as well. But I heard it in the language. Maybe we spoke about it 2 years back, but I totally forgot. But I could just tell in the language of how you're describing it. It sounded like yeah. Landmark for sure. But
yeah. Anyways, I didn't know you were an ILP leader. That's awesome, man. So yeah. you were all in.
Oh yeah. I was, like 2 years of my life were really, really dedicated to Landmark, and it really helped me start inner confidence as well. I learned all yeah. about the, you know, the process of enrolling people, and I had no idea how to sell anything, and that was yeah. a huge transformation for me. Also, but just getting authentic with my life, as you were talking about.
Yeah, exactly, and stop bullshitting yourself, and that really helped me discover that I actually wanted to direct and not act, and that I needed to make a change. So I had about like $24,000 in a 401k, and I said, fuck it, and quit my job that day. Like, literally, at the end of the last day of the course, I said, I'm going to do this. I had no directing experience. I had some acting experience. That's it. $24,000 quickly turned into $16,000 with the hit you take from withdrawing your 401k early.
Right.
And basically, from there, I started telling everyone, yeah, I'm a director, and just started putting the word out, and people started asking me for small little jobs and stuff like that I could partake in. And then I didn't get my first job literally to like the last dollar ran out. Like I went through all the money. It was like 6 months or something like that. I took in a class, bought a camera with some of the money, and I was down to like maybe the last like $500. And I'm like, fuck. And then I just went up to someone very boldly and said, you need to hire me to do this type of, to do video production for you. And this is how much you should pay me. Telling them they used to pay me $1,000 a week, basically, because you have a marketing company and you have no video. And you sure you could hire me to do a video for you? It's going to cost you $2,000 and that would just get you one video. But you're a marketing company. You need to put videos out every week, all the time. And they're like, you're right. You're hired, you know, like on the spot. And so like all of a sudden I went from zero to having like a client that's paying me like $52,000 a year, just like that. Like,
not bad. I've got the same story. I've got the almost identical story. I was starting in this coaching business, and I had just gotten laid off from a venture capital private equity firm in 2008 when the stock market crashed. I was down to like my last dollar, and I called this dude up, and I'm like, "You need to hire me for $3,000 a month. We're gonna do an all inclusive." You know, dating thing, $3,000 a month. We're going to work together for 2 years. So he's like, okay.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. And it's just like, you kind of probably sit back like, what the fuck? That worked?
Yeah. They call it a landmark, right? When you have your ass on the line, like the, you know, do or die situation, You always get it done.
Yeah, that's very true. So anyways, went a couple of years trying to get better at video production skills, learning all the crafts of it. I did that for like 3 or 4 years and then got into music videos and all that type of stuff. But I drank the juice, you know, over at Landmark, was a part of it for like 3 or 4 years. And, you know, when you do your first transformation course, you kind of look to it as like it's God. You're like, oh, my God, this is it. This is it. This is everything.
I found my cult.
Yeah, exactly. Like almost like that, you know, and even though it's not definitely not a cult, but it's like you have that feeling for sure. Right. And it wasn't until like 4 years later where the technology kind of started to grow stagnant for me, where I'm just like, okay, this is working on some levels, but some levels it's not. So I took on another course. Did this Men's Weekend course, which was amazing. And then I did the Psy program. Like Landmark deals a lot with the head, the mind. Psy deals more with like the heart and the emotions of things. But I'd say what really changed things for me and really transformed a lot was this 10-day of silence meditation called Vipassana. And it's all free. You know, it's completely free. They put you up in your own room, you know, all your food's taken care of. You have your own shower, and basically you sit in silence for 10 days. And that was probably like, I saw kind of like a ceiling to each one of these courses. Like you get to a new place, it launches you up in life, but it kind of, each one had this ceiling that it could only take you so far. The Vipassana was the one thing I found where it's just felt like it was endless and limitless. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know so many people that have done it. You know, a lot of the other guys that both of us know in Phoenix area, you know, Joel and co, all the guys in the Sterling Men's Group. Did you start that, or I know you were involved with it?
Yeah, no, I was leading. You go to the Men's Weekend, which is like a retreat, or it's kind of like a 3-day weekend, like Landmark. But then you go back and you start like a team for your state, you know, and you all get together once a week, talk about your goals, what you're up to, and holding each other accountable to be the men you've always wanted to be. So I was leading the team of Arizona for a bit. But I didn't start it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's the guys I used to work with at Pickup 101 before I started Inner Confidence, all of them, I mean, not all of them, but most of the head instructors, like the main core group, were all big Vipassana guys, or they became Vipassana guys as time went on. And it's funny, my best friend, who is like the least likely guy to ever do any sort of meditation, like the most, you know, in his head, you know, that shit's fucking stupid, it's a waste of time, make money, fuck bitches, you know, that sort of mentality. He got really sick. He was diagnosed with MS, and he kind of had this, you know, basically, all right, I'm probably going to, he thought, but before he thought it was MS, he thought it was a brain tumor. They weren't sure what it was. So he thought, okay, I'm going to die. And luckily it wasn't the brain tumor. It was MS. And he's done so much meditation, and really changed his life. So for me, it was always something that I knew was really effective. But the idea of meditating, it was just like the worst possible thing you could make me do. Like sit somewhere quiet and don't do anything is like my definition of hell. I remember you and I talked about it a while back. Like you should do it. I'm like, fuck, I know I probably should, because usually in life you should do the thing that you want to do the least.
Definitely.
And so I've been gradually getting into meditation more and more. And you know, using the app Headspace, and now I can do unguided meditations, and but still, that's something on my list because I think it would be really good for me. And I'm curious to hear, like, what was your experience doing? I know you've done it a few times, right?
Yeah, I've done a total of 60 days of silence, and then
now is it?
I think.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. What I was going to say is, I think what makes me different than most of the people that do it, because I've checked in with a lot of people that do it. And yeah, I obviously know tons of people who've done it, and there are a few people that actually take it home with them and keep doing it because they recommend you do, like, you feel great. Obviously you've been meditating for 10 days straight and you've stripped a lot of baggage, But they suggest doing 2 hours a day. And I think I'm one of the very few people, you know, that actually takes that home with them and applies it. And I know some people who take it further than that and like stay at the centers for 6 months, years at a time and stuff like that. But, I feel like it seems like a lot of people like go do the 10 days and then they get away from it and start doing their own thing a lot of times. Mm. But the benefit is in keeping it in your life because you get to this clear space of empty and meaningless, you know, almost like, you know, like just a clean slate of emotions and you've dropped all this baggage.
Right.
Well, life's still going to life, you know,
yep.
Like good shit's going to happen, bad shit's going to happen. Like no one is free of problems, you know?
Right.
And as soon as you deal with one problem, you know, something else is going to be there, you know? And if you get more successful, higher caliber problems are going to be there. And no matter who you are, you know, that can affect you emotionally. And what it teaches you to do is basically drop that every day, you know, like just allows you to be with that and like clear that every day. So that stuff doesn't build up. So you don't get sick, you know, you don't have emotional breakdowns. You don't feel unfulfilled type of things like that.
Right. What was the effect it had on your trauma as a kid?
So, yeah, I had this trauma, obviously, and it was around women, right? Because what happened with my mom and my sister, and it felt I wasn't safe, and I didn't feel like, kind of bringing it to your area of expertise, too, with women, it's like I didn't feel safe around women. Like, it felt like they could get, like, snatched away from me at any moment, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so it's like it's not safe to love them or care about them. And so, basically, this was a crazy fucking experience. Like, my first 10 day, this is what happened. So, the first 4 days when you're at this Vipassana, you're focusing on breath, right? Just watching the breath come in and go out, come in and go out. And it's basically teaching you just to observe and not judge your breath like, oh, I need to breathe harder, slower, or anything like that. And it's sharpening your mind because you're basically focusing on one thing for 4 days straight. And in, like all those voices are going to come up. You want to get distracted. You hear a sound. You smell something. You feel something. You want to get distracted. And you just keep bringing your focus back to breath. Well, after 4 days, your mind has become laser sharp. So from there, they introduce what's called Vipassana.
And when you say laser sharp, it just means you can focus on the breath and thoughts and outside distractions won't affect you as much?
Yeah, they disappear, right? Okay. Like they might disappear for 1 minute. Okay, as you do it, then they might disappear for 5 minutes. Then you might be able to go to an hour, you know?
I can go like 7 seconds, I think.
Yeah, right? Like, exactly. That's just how everyone is pretty much, you know? Mm-hmm. So it starts shutting that voice up because you're not reacting to it. And reacting is what kind of like gives that voice power. You know, it wants to keep chirping, but the more you can just let it be, it kind of quiets. Mm-hmm. So you just keep bringing your attention to your breath. And then that's called anapana. And that's just meant to sharpen your mind. And then they introduce you to Vipassana, which is like learning to be equanimous to whatever arises. Meaning if I steal your car, your girl, or $10 million from you, that you can say this is neither good nor bad. Like judge it. You don't know if it's good or bad. And basically just watching it for what it is. So they do that through sensation, though. So you start watching your body. They start scanning, you know, your head, your torso, your legs, and basically at first you can maybe feel your whole leg. You're like, oh yeah, I feel sensation in my leg. And maybe you start getting like able to focus just on one area, like just your hand, and then you can bring it down just to a finger. Then it becomes so sharp that you just feel the sensation, like literally like a pin drop anywhere in your body. But what starts to happen is you have all this pain in your body that is associated with past traumas, and it starts to arise again. Because you start getting, your mind starts becoming attuned and sharp to it. So it starts to arise. And instead of judging it, you start watching it. It might feel like literally like picture your leg and like it might feel like a big, like 1 pound steak, you know, like this huge sensation. It's just vibrating. It's aching. But as you be with it and don't judge it and just watch it, it starts becoming smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And you start realizing your mind, oh, wait, this isn't all throughout my leg. It's really in just like a somewhere at like a pin drop of pain somewhere. And then when you can get to that pin drop and watch that pin drop and not judge it as good and bad, good or bad, and you just watch it and be with it, it literally dissolves. So going back to what you're talking about, did you have a question?
Yeah, well, I wanted to interject with that's exactly the experience that my buddy has had. dealing with his trauma. He had a really traumatic childhood as well. And he said verbatim, word for word, what you just said. And also, I've studied a lot of movement therapy back in the day with a guy named Carl Wolf. I didn't grow up with a lot of trauma. I'm sure I have a ton in there, but I don't have a lot of stories, you know? And I had a relatively easy, safe, very loving, fun childhood. But, you know, we all have whatever. We could be traumatized by some bully saying you're fat. You never know, right? Yeah. You know? But, no, it's interesting, though, because you described the exact same experience. And then the quote, you know, our issues are in the tissues. Which is, I forget where I heard that, but, you know, we carry our emotional issues in our body as pain, as, you know, so it sounds, I'm guessing you've had a major experience of that. Maybe you had some, you know, pain in your body because of the trauma and you've been able to heal that.
100%. Like that's, about the sixth night I was there, right? I'm lying in bed. And just, we're 6 days into this. Things are finally kind of like feeling a bit easy. And I just, wake up in throbbing pain. Like one of the worst pains I've ever felt in my life. It literally felt like someone was trying to chainsaw off my leg. Fuck. And it was like, I wanted to break down in tears. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Do I need to go wake someone up? Is something wrong? Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh no, just meditate. Okay. Meditate for 30 minutes, you know, like be with it, see what happens. Nothing happens. You know, I'd be with it. It's just throbbing. Okay. Go walk around for 30 minutes. Go back to meditating for 30 minutes, walk around. This was like, in the middle of the night, you know, and this is going on for like 3 hours straight.
Was it like a Charlie horse sort of pain or?
Way worse. No, I literally felt like someone was like cutting off my leg, like cutting it off. Like
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, no, I literally did. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, am I losing my leg or something like that? And then all of a sudden, I lay back down, like thinking I should wake someone up almost because how bad this pain is. And this voice comes up out of nowhere. It wasn't like me saying it or anything. Like it was just like an unconscious, like almost from like some source saying, and it said, "You are terrified, a woman." And in that moment, literally like a avalanche or a volcano, just like all this pain just went rushing out of my leg. Like it felt like just literally like a lava, like this, all this lava was being pushed out my leg. And like it was this huge rush and it just poured out of my leg and all the pain was gone like that. Like literally. It was like the voice, "You are terrified of women," and then boom, like it's just like a huge the Hoover Dam opened up or something like that and just rushed out my fucking leg and that was a trip. But then all of a sudden it was like I was free of that. I was holding on to this trauma of being like terrified of women, you know, not like because they could be like taken away from me, mm-hmm. you know, and worried about being intimate with them and all that stuff. And it was just like gone. And that's like, that's the best example I can give you. And the same thing happened to me with money. You know, I went back after, 10 days. I was like, fuck, why did I go do this? I just wasted 10 days. I wasn't focused on my business. It cost me money. I have all these bills now. I'm back. I'm back behind a work 10 days and I'm like, whatever, just take the practice. And use it.
And so I've got a few questions about your experience. So when you say meditate for all day, you know, what's the actual hours? I'm sure you have to eat and sleep and all that.
So there's a schedule. It starts at 5 a.m. with a morning bell, right? Mm-hmm. So you're supposed to go in the hall and meditate from 5 to 6 and then a little break and then 6 to 7 and then a 30-minute break, then breakfast at 7:30. So you do not have to go in the hall during those times. Like I was kind of at times lazy and I just chose to sleep in a couple 2.5 hours extra,
right?
Many days just, yeah. And you got to gauge it for yourself. Some people can go in there and just meditate all day. And, for me, I just wanted more sleep.
Yeah.
And so there's only 6 mandatory meditations where you actually have to be in the hall. So that would be 6 hours of meditation. They want you doing about 13 hours of meditation. But those are left to your own discretion. Like they say, "Hey, go meditate." You're supposed to be meditating, but again, if you need to sleep, if you need to relax or shower, do whatever you want to do, you can do that. And then there's 3 meals, breakfast, lunch, and then dinner is just usually a snack, like something very light. And it's very nutritious food, so you're not going to be hungry. You don't have to worry about like not getting enough food. It's like a buffet of healthy food. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then at 1 o'clock, you can sign up if you want, if you have any questions, and go talk to the teacher and ask him any questions. That's the only time you're allowed to talk, is to go ask questions.
So no human interaction all day aside from, or talking, except for that.
Nope. Wow. Yeah, no, 30 men on one side, 30 women on the other side. No eye contact, nothing like that. Just
no eye fucking.
No eye fucking. No. Yeah, and then also they ask you to restrain from killing, obviously, and I think they kind of take that as like, don't eat meat while you're there, or don't like kill a bug or anything like that. And then also no sex, so they don't want you jerking off or anything like that. Which is great, you know, if people have porn addictions and stuff like that, you know, that can really just cure them of that and solve that issue. But if you have issues with sex, like porn, it's going to be pretty hard not to jerk off for 10 days, you know, for sure. When you're up to your own, like your own space, you know, you're going to probably want to be doing a lot of that. So,
but that's cool. They give you your own room and it's all free, you said, right? Other than getting there?
Yeah. They've got like 100 centers around the world, basically. And this, like, they're like very nice centers. Like they're big, they're huge. And it's just basically, it's run off donation. Afterwards, they say, look, like if you want, you can donate something, to it. It's not expected or anything like that. Yeah. But just, and it cost them something like, $1,200 per person or something like that, that they put through this thing. Like, oh, wow. That's crazy to think of, you know? Yeah. And like, I didn't donate $1,200 when I was done. I didn't, like when I did it the first time, I didn't even get close to that, you know? And sure. It's just, but people have gotten so much out of it that like, it's changed their life so much. They donate so much money. And it's like, and they believe in karma, just basically giving. Mm-hmm. And they're an example of that. Like, how do they have 100 centers around the world?
Yeah.
And they're each at least an acre big, probably at least two to three acres, with like housing enough for like 100 people, you know, and feeding all these people.
It's like
a
huge resort, it sounds like.
Yeah. It's like, imagine Landmark had to work like off just donation. They'd be bankrupt, you know, because sure. people need to invest something to feel like they're getting something. Like, I remember I was coaching this kid a little while ago and I just did it to him for free. Like, he didn't honor or respect the coaching at all because he didn't pay for it, you know?
Right.
Like, he's just kind of like, oh, I can do this whenever. So obviously,
out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, and I knew that was probably coming and stuff like that. And, but the investment is you willing to leave your life for 10 days. That's the investment that you're putting in, you know, and that's a lot.
And you're totally disconnected during that time, right? You have no email, cell, anything like that, right?
Yeah, no FaceTime, no Facebook, Instagram, nothing, no phones, no laptops, no books, nothing. It's you in a room for 10 days. You know, yeah.
So what if something like really bad happens, you know, family member dies, someone needs to get a hold of you. They have a number they can call or?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, now you're getting nitpicky. You know,
nitpicky
now
you're like, yeah. No, it's fascinating to me because, you know, it's just such a crazy idea to unplug like that. I had an experience not even close to that, but I was on a cruise ship for a few days in Cuba. And this was last year. No cell phone. I couldn't get anything to work there. And I felt amazing just being completely disconnected and unplugged. So I can imagine how it feels after 10 days. Getting back to what you were saying about, you know, it transformed your relationship with women. And you had studied some pickup and dating stuff, social dynamics. Was that before Vipassana?
Yeah, no, I studied that. Like, a friend passed me a David D'Angelo book, I think when I was 16. And then we just started running through like everything like we could get our hands on. And then what always interests me about you, Robbie, is because I remember hearing you years ago. Like you're saying, like, you know, inner game's great, you know, and all, but really what fucking matters is taking the action, you know, actually going out there and doing it. And I personally couldn't agree more. You know, I've done so much inner work. Like, I can't tell you, I've dedicated to, I don't know, like 12 years of my life to it, you know, and just day in and day out. And yeah, the thing that really makes a difference is going on doing that. And that's what I was doing with this last kid I was coaching, just helping him as a friend. You know, I was like, all right, we need to get your feet wet. Can you commit to approaching 10 girls or whatever, you know, like just go up to them, be vulnerable, tell them what you think of them, like whatever inspires you about them, like they're beautiful, or you love the way they dress or anything that comes to you, and just do that and leave it at that, like a baby step, you know?
Yeah.
And basically, you know, the kid completely broke down, like didn't do any of them. And then I was like, all right, well, let's, could you handle three and not even ask for the number, just go up to him and compliment them. And then, you know, he did three, and then he made up some huge story how women hate being approached. They're creeped out by it and all this type of stuff. I'm like, no, women aren't creeped out by people approaching them. That's what you're bringing to the table.
Right.
So then I just suggested to him, like, look, man, be vulnerable, like, be honest and go up to them and basically say, hey, I'm nervous. And that will, like, clear the space, you know? And if you're feeling nervous, just say, I'm really nervous, but this and that, whatever inspires you about them. And that's, like, what I know now, like, really the only thing that makes a difference is the actual action. Like, I could read 100 books about women, relationships, or about money or anything like that, but really what makes the difference is actually getting up and taking the action, and that's the quickest way to transformation. And then that's kind of what the 10 days is. Like, you are taking actual action, and then your life looks completely different, as opposed just to trying to figure out everything, you know? Yeah,
trying to think it through.
Yeah.
That's, I feel like, where people get stuck the most is, they paralysis of analysis, and they never do anything, but they're addicted to studying it and trying to be perfect, and you're better off just doing the opposite and going in with no plan at all and completely fucking it up,
because it doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel right, so I'm not going to do it. I don't feel good, it doesn't feel right, so no, I'm not ready to take action, I need to learn more.
So what did you see? So you had already studied a decent amount, and what was the big transformation, after that experience you had with the pain in your leg and, seeing the effect it had with women, right? Being scared of women and scared that something's going to happen to them. Did you see – it sounds like that probably created a huge transformation, even though you had studied a bunch of dating stuff and you were approaching and, probably dating girls and having fun and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Right? But what changed after that?
Well, really, it's just like I could be equanimous. Like, I could go up to someone, say I had feelings for them, and they could say, get away from me, you jerk, or whatever it was. Like, no one's ever said that to me in my life, but that I could be equanimous to it. It's neither good nor bad. And I guys beat themselves up. If a girl doesn't give them their number, or they say, like, I have a boyfriend, or they act a little weird, they take it and make it mean, like, tons of stuff that it doesn't mean.
You're right.
As opposed to, I can just be with it. Like, this is neither good nor bad. It's just, I found someone, like my girlfriend right now. I saw her across the coffee shop, and she looked, like, completely unavailable. She was, like, bundled up with a bunch of clothes, like, looking at her laptop. I tried making eye contact with her, like, 10 times.
So it was a day game. It was a day game pickup, guys. You hear that? Day game works.
Always. Always. That's how – yeah, definitely. And she gets up and, like, I'm not feeling it. I'm like, I don't feel good. I'm not in the right mood to do this right now. She looks like she's taken. She's super focused on her work. I've tried making eye contact with her 10 times. She hasn't looked up once. And she gets up and leaves and walks out the door. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Who cares? So I get up, of course, and just go after her and grab her and be vulnerable with her and just say, hey, I think you're absolutely beautiful. And, I asked her if she had a boyfriend. She said no. And then, I told her I'd love to take her out. And yeah, that's that, and I could have been like, I could have judged everything like, oh, she's unavailable. She's got a boyfriend probably. That's why she's so focused, and made all this stuff mean, but I was equanimous to it. And even if she didn't call me or anything, it wouldn't mean anything, it doesn't mean like, oh, I suck at this or I'm not good at this. Nothing like that. I can just be with it. And that makes things so light, like it doesn't have to be a heavy, heavy thing, and allows you just to leave that at the door.
Yeah, it's kind of removing the dickhead voice that most of us walk around with, right? We're our own worst enemies usually. At least I know my inner voice can be really, really brutal, tough on myself, call myself horrible names. And the way when I see it most is actually when I'm doing things that I think I should be really good at, like golf, for example. I played collegiate golf, got a scholarship to play in college, and if I don't shoot under par, or if I hit a shitty shot, my first thought is fucking loser, fuck you. I go through this horrible process, then I break clubs, and it really ruined golf for me. So it's crazy to really think about how mean we are to ourselves. And I'm curious, for you going through the process of meditation, I'm sure that had a major impact on that voice for you, right?
Well, yeah. And it's just like, it's helped me in so many ways. It's just like me and my girlfriend still have normal people problems, right? Everyone, mm-hmm. you know, you get in little fights and stuff like that. It doesn't have to be big or anything like that. And what starts to happen is like lists get to be formed. You know, you make this huge list on this person. Oh, this person did that. This person did this, that, that. And what it allowed me to do is basically just be with that, like be with that emotionally and drop it as mm-hmm. opposed to judging it and carrying it forward. Like you just literally, it teaches you just to be with the emotions of what's going actually on and literally just watch it dissolve.
So do you have a daily practice of going through your day and kind of observing or remembering the certain emotions you had that could have caused, you know, whatever amount of trauma and just sitting with those and allowing them to dissolve?
Yeah, it definitely, like ideally, like it's 2 hours a day, right? You wake up, you know, I wake up and try to do my Vipassana right away every morning for when I'm thriving, like 50 minutes a day. And you don't have to remember anything. Mm-hmm. Like it's right there. Like there's tightness in your chest or there's pain in your stomach or your groin or your spine or your throat, anywhere. You know, it's like, it's very obvious once you start doing the practice. And so you don't have to like remember anything. It's right there. And right when you start doing Vipassana, you're going to feel it because it's such surface level stuff. If it happened today or yesterday, like as opposed to stuff that happened in your childhood, it's much more deeper and takes much more concentration.
Right.
So it's fresh and new. So like, it's very easy just to drop that. And there was a time when I wasn't doing it and with my girlfriend, and she was noticing, she's like, she didn't really say anything. She was being very compassionate, but talking about it afterwards when I wasn't meditating for a little bit, she's like, and then I started again. She's like, wow, like it's night and day different. And she was like, you were so sensitive to everything. You know, it's like, I didn't know what was going on. You're just like sensitive and taking everything so personal. And it felt like we were just butting heads so much more. And then the moment I started like meditating and taking the practice here again, all that got dropped. And then just everything was firing on all cylinders. You know, the relationship felt new and fresh every day, every moment. We might get like I think it was last night or a couple nights ago, we got in an argument. And it was something like could be big for some couples. And literally, like 20 minutes later, we're laughing, rolling around in bed. And she looks at me and says, she's like, oh my God. Like, I really can't believe we're here right now. Like, like that, seriously, like I really thought like there was no way tonight this was going to get solved. And like you were going to leave and we're going to spend the night alone and talking about things, thinking about things just because of the situation. And literally it was 20, 30 minutes later, we're rolling around the bed laughing and like it never even happened because of that tool.
Wow. It's crazy. People don't realize the impact of their relationships and how it affects the rest of their life. You know, you have a little fight with your girlfriend or something significant or insignificant, but the amount of mental energy you can spend thinking about that and, you know, trying to resolve it in your head and thinking about how you're going to resolve it with her, it completely sidetracks your entire life. I know, at least for me anyways.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so having the ability to drop these issues that cloud our mind and get back to, you know, more happy, interesting things to do is, fuck, if you were to add up like the time and the opportunity cost that you saved, it would be, depending on, you know, whoever the person is, depending on their hourly rate, that could be thousands, 10,000, million bucks over the course of a year, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's like, that's just how people, like, we've grown numb to it. You know, we've grown so numb to feeling lethargic, heavy, weighed down, not our true self, not feeling fully self-expressed. And that's why, like, people, men are walking around like assholes and jerks, and you can look at them and they want to fight you. You know what I mean? Or you look at a woman wrong, or you say something to a woman and she could be a total bitch. You know, for no reason, right? It's just like we're walking around with all this baggage and all these trigger points and stuff like that. And there's no need for it, but we aren't taught as human beings how to deal with our emotions. They like, you don't get taught that in elementary school or high school. You know, we get taught history, science, math, stuff we'll barely ever use instead of like emotional intelligence, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's unfortunate.
So you also said that when you were going through the process, the first time you went, you were mentioning you had some sort of issue around money or you had some breakthrough there too. What was that?
So I go home, right? And at the time, this was like 7 years ago, I think, or 6 years ago, I did my first one. And I was like, what the fuck did I do? Like, I barely had any money. Why did I go do this? I thought it was going to be transformative. Where's my money? Why isn't there $1 million in my bank account or whatever, you know, like making up all this stupid stuff.
Wait, so your immediate thought after, you know, when you left, were you like, this was amazing, I'm so glad I did it? Or was it more of the, fuck, what, I need to get back to real life? What were your...
It was amazing that right away when I walked out, this is amazing, you know, and like I don't know what I got. You don't know what you get out of it until you leave, because you're like, oh, okay, like all this stuff's gone, all this pain's gone, and like in other courses like Landmark, you work things out in your mind. Yeah. There, you're just being with things and pain, and you don't know. But then when you go home, everything looks different. So I was charged up about it. But then I went home, and, you know, a huge trigger for me has always been money, you know, and I'm like, I look at my bank account, I'm like, I feel dominated by it, I don't feel safe around it, and I shouldn't have done this, like, it's going to put me in a tight situation now, and I'm like, you know what, nope, just practice the technique and see what happens. So I go home, sit on my meditation bag for an hour, and I focus on my spine, the bottom root of spine. And they don't talk about chakras or anything like that. But if you know a little bit about chakras, that's like your root chakra, and supposed to be connected to your safety, your well, like your overall well being and
chakra,
like your money,
right?
Your money. Chakra. Yeah. Root. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, yeah. Like your money. Like right. That's like, if there's blocks there, you probably can't have money flowing very easily. So yeah. So I go meditate, and I never really meditate on that specific area too much, but I'm meditating on that area. And all of a sudden, it's like, it feels like someone's taking like an ice pick, like, and stabbing it up at the bottom of my spine upwards. And it's
fucked in the ass with an ice pick.
Yeah, not in the butthole, but like right behind it where the bottom of the spine, but right there. Yeah.
The tailbone.
It felt like that. Yeah. Which is, I'd rather have it in my butt than in my tailbone. Like, it'd be a lot fucking less painful. Shit. So it just feels like it's going up there, you know, this pain, and I just be with it and sit with it. And I sat with it for like 20 minutes. Then all of a sudden, like, this voice again, something came up and said, like, and just created this feeling. It said, you're taken care of. And all of a sudden that pain just dissolved, you know? And then all of a sudden, so I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I feel all good. I feel great. And, I stopped my meditation, and then literally, like, so up to that point, the biggest music video I ever booked was like a $2,500 job. Like, I was going to make $2,500 off of it. Right. Mm-hmm. So within 25 minutes, someone from Scotland calls me and books a $7,500 job. Like, just like that,
damn.
Like within 20 minutes. Yeah, it was just like, holy shit, this stuff works. There was a block around me being taken care of and my money, and I sat with it, and this pain came up, and it was obviously that I didn't feel taken care of. I dissolved it, and then there was room for that to show up, and instantly, like, it showed up. So it showed me, like, we basically just have, like, we come into this world being taken care of. You know, children are taken care of, we feel safe, you know, we're fully self-expressed, and then we tack on all this baggage. And that, like, we get told we're wrong, or we make things wrong, and then basically we walk around with a suitcase full of baggage that basically is holding us back from certain things, whether it's love, intimacy, wealth, health, anything like that. And if we can just clear those pain blocks, we can basically allow that to enter our life.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, to me, it was just like, okay, well, this has no...
That's crazy. That's such an immediate... you know, win right after.
Yeah. Immediate.
So me personally, I'm not skeptical, because I 100% see these things happen all the time. But to, like, the skeptic out there who's like, yeah, well, so I'm going to go meditate and then wake up the next day, 10K is going to come in. Like, you know, what do you say to someone like that? They're just not ready for it?
First, I'm going to just say you're an idiot. No, it's just like all I would say is just, like, look at your life. Is it working to the degree you want it to work? You know, and I think we know best, and we've got our life figured out. We know what we need personally, but other people have gone through these journeys before us and have done the work. So it's like, all you can really do is just listen to others and, yeah, just hear what I got out of it personally. Like, literally, like, you heard what I went through as a child. And those are some very traumatic things,
yeah.
You know, and yeah, this basically freed me of it. So,
well, it's crazy. They say, don't believe everything you think. And most people do. You know, we walk around and we have thoughts all day, and we're always trying to figure out what's right or wrong or true or false. and living in that world, which is just completely insane. It's it's crazy because there is no right or wrong. There's no, you know, good or bad or you know, true and false. And if you walk around in that headspace, you actually believe the crazy shit that your mind tells you. And your mind's just a tool. It's like your arm. It's, you know, it's not meant to run your life. But the society we live in, I think that's really the case. So I can see how, you know, just with my own short, you know, introduction to meditation over the past couple months, I've really had that experience. And it's nuts.
Yeah, definitely. And what I'd say to that too, like I was meditating for years before I went there at the Vipassana, and I thought I was meditating, like I was doing the visualization, the voiceover meditations where they walk you through these journeys, just every time, like tons of different meditations. Like when you go do the 10-day, I got the sense, like I was like, what the fuck was I doing before? You know what I mean? Like almost like that. Like, you know, I was meditating and I thought I was meditating and I probably was meditating at some form, but you go so much deeper. You're just like, what the fuck was I doing, doing before that? Literally. So, but also like think about it. 10 days of silence scares you, right, Robbie? Like thinking about it scares you. So I think you would agree, like the quickest way to get like results and action in your life and something new is like going out and doing what you're scared of. You know, like my girlfriend loves roller coasters. I hate roller coasters, you know, and I hadn't been on a roller coaster in, I don't know, like 7 years. So I do all this personal development work, you know, and like the landmark stuff like that. And you know, I'm still scared of roller coasters. Right. And that wasn't going to make like a direct difference of just like thinking about roller coasters. Oh no, they're safe. No, what was going to make the action is direct action of doing what I was scared of.
Yeah.
So I hopped on the roller coasters and we went on 10 roller coasters. I hated it all the way through.
Really?
But it started. Oh yeah. I hated it. I absolutely I went on one of the scariest ones first, like, you know, like one of the fastest ones there. And I'm like, okay, there, I don't have to go on anymore. And then I was like, no, keep pushing yourself. I went on the one that, you know, that just takes you up really high, just drops straight down and you're in a seat.
Yeah.
I fucking hate that. Like if you told me I would ever do that in my life, I'd say you're full of shit. I did that too. But like it started, like the next couple days I was like on this like high of just like, my mind was confused. Like it was almost like, well, you were so scared of that, you know, and you conquered it and you went and did that and like opened up this new space. And I would just say, if you're scared of it, which I've never met anyone who's not scared of a 10-day of silence meditation. That's like a clear sign there's something for you to get out of it.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's so hard to do, but every single time I've faced a fear that I didn't want to face, I had, you know, one of the most life-changing experiences afterwards.
Yeah. You were probably scared at one time to approach a girl, right?
Oh, terrified. I had to take a $3,000 class with the Pickup 101 just so I could walk up to a girl and tell her she's cute and run away. I had to pay someone $3,000 so I would do it. And then I had to pay again because I did it at the workshop and then I didn't do it when I got back home. And
exactly.
It's crazy.
And
right?
you're following your dreams right now and you have a kick-ass life. Like anyone who's been coached by Robbie or knows Robbie, like think about if Robbie never approached that girl. Like, think about that. His life would look... Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, your life would be completely different.
Totally. I don't know what I'd be doing, but shit. Yeah, it's...
So, Robbie, go approach that girl again. It's at the 10-day of silence.
No, man. I think I think it's not far out for me. You know, we talked about it a few years back when you were in L.A., and I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. I definitely probably need it, but fuck. That's not going to be anytime soon, but I've been slowly but surely, you know, getting into it. And for me, growing up as a kid, I think I've got some sort of trauma around boredom. I think I was put in time out a lot as a kid for beating up my sister, or, you know, just being a kind of like a class clown or just a rambunctious kid. And I hate sitting alone. Like I will do anything to avoid it. So just the practice of meditation, just being able to start it at all and get through, you know, the couple months I've done have been like hell. But for the first time, I think 2 days ago, I actually enjoyed it for the first time. I had a moment where I was like, oh, this isn't so bad. And then it went away. And then
why do you hate it? Like, tell me, like, what about it? Like, say, like, what do you hate about being alone? Like, exactly.
Well, it's not so much about being alone. It's kind of like I had this dread to do it. kind of like that feeling where you, if you haven't worked out in a while, it's like, oh, I know I should go to the gym, but I don't want to. I think I walk around with a ton of guilt. And I've noticed, just being more aware of my thoughts recently, I noticed how often I feel guilty just for the stupidest things. Like, oh, you should, you know, your dog wants to go out. You haven't taken him out in the last couple hours, or, oh, you haven't done this, you haven't done that. It's just guilt, guilt, guilt all the time. And, so I have this, it's something I know I should be doing, but I have all of this guilt around it. So, but for the first time when I realized that, I sat in that guilt, and that's when I actually enjoyed the meditation. Go figure, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's so one of the things I'm, go ahead.
Oh no. So it sounds like, yeah, you sat with the guilt, right? And allowed yourself to experience that. And then on the other side of that was like enjoyment.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know what the guilt's about or anything. I don't really feel like I have anything to be guilty for or high, but it's just little things like you should be doing this. You should be, you know, I have a poker background, so I'm always thinking of how to be, you know, optimal in all situations, right? How can I maximize expected value, which is a very mathematical way of looking at life. But I got stuck in that way of operating, like, okay, today should be boom, 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 get all this shit done, then do this. And if I deviate from that course, then I'll start to feel guilty about it. Oh, you didn't do it. You broke your pattern. And it's not a, you know, it can be a very self-traumatizing way to live. You just beat yourself up a lot. And I'm a master self-abuser.
Yeah, and usually what I find, you know, I do a lot of coaching just naturally with friends and family from just, you know, the amount of work I've done, is with a lot of guilt, you know, what lies there. When the guilt comes up, there's like some story or some listening of, yeah, I feel guilty, but I deserve it. You know, like there's this kind of like something saying that you kind of deserve it. Like, you hit your sister or you, and you're sitting in the corner. I don't want to do this. I feel guilty, but I know I should be here. You know, you did something wrong, you know,
so you're paying for it.
Yeah, and you feel like somewhere in your inside your body that you know you deserve it, type of thing. Yeah. But you really don't. You don't.
You know? No, you don't. Yeah. It's interesting. I've been have you studied any nonviolent communication?
I'm not. I don't believe I have.
Yeah, check it out. It's just YouTube nonviolent communication, and there's like a 3-hour video. And it talks a lot about right and wrong and punishment and rewards. So it's his theory. I won't really get into it because I don't know it, but his theory is there's if we could rid the world of punishment and rewards, there'd be no more violence. It's really cool stuff, and it's great for transforming relationships too, how you speak to one another. And sounds like something you and your girlfriend would probably enjoy doing together. By the way, what has been your experience with dating girls who maybe haven't been into meditation or who haven't been into personal growth?
Oh, like girls are brilliant. Like girls, like I know they are so much more intelligent than us on just on an emotional level, spiritual level, and just like, yeah, on so many different things. Who, like I'm, again, my girlfriend, we've been dating a total, like we've known each other 6 months, seriously dating the last couple months. And they catch up like so fast.
Yeah.
Like I feel like she's right there with me. Like literally, like maybe like just like, yeah, like right there at my level. And not when I met her, she wasn't there, but they just can learn things so quick. And it's literally as the man, like you're the leader, you know, in that. And they can just like step up and just be there with you. Like that's what I've learned, you know, like for me, that's not how it occurs to me that like she's just gone through so much stuff over the last 3 months. It's remarkable. So, and
just kind of following your lead, it sounds like, cause I'm sure, I mean, the way you're so enrolling, the way you talk about these things, you know, anyone who's listening would, especially if they were your girlfriend, right? And they're in love with you and they're with you all the time, they're naturally going to want to get involved as well.
Yeah. It only takes like, there's a distinction in landmark, right? Like it takes you being 100% responsible for the relationship and putting them 0% responsible for the relationship working. And then when you really take that on and just make sure you yourself are taken care of, like I found she just follows suit. She like falls like right into that and steps up right there and is ready to kick ass. And yeah, I think men need a lot more evolving than women do personally, especially in like the emotional, spiritual side of things.
For sure. Definitely. I think women live in their bodies a lot more, and that's very helpful.
Yeah. And we as men make it wrong because it's not logical, right? Right.
Stupid girls, what the fuck, you know, doing their nails, exactly. They do it.
Yeah, and they're more about like feeling good, which is probably a healthier way to be, you know, as
they live longer.
Like, yeah. Well, yeah, think about it. Feeling good as opposed to be like, no, that's not right. This is wrong. We're living in the world of right or wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
As men. And
it's not a fun, world. So
no.
So tell me, how did you, so I know you've been making music videos for a long time.
Yeah.
And I know you just came out with your film. Or how far along are you in the process? You shot the trailer. What's going on with that?
We shot the whole thing. The whole thing shot. The whole feature film. We went out to Port Angeles, beautiful area, the Olympic National Forest. It's a psychological thriller, and we shot the whole thing there. It's all done. So then we just threw up a rough draft of a trailer because we just needed to raise some additional funds for color correction and sound design, basically to get the thing done. And the film is like incredible. Like I've shown it to tons of people. And the first thing they say, like when I tell them how much we shot it for like $50,000, which is nothing.
How
like
much?
Literally that's like peanuts. $50,000.
Wow.
And that's the first thing they say when they actually see it. They're like, what the fuck? Like this looks like
the trailer looked really cool too.
Well, yeah.
That could be a $50,000 trailer.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Like it's just,
what does a big blockbuster movie spend on a trailer? Probably a few million, right?
Oh, at least, you know, and just, and like the thing is, like, that shows I've been working on my craft for the last like 8-9 years. You know, it's not like I just quit my job and said, let's go make a movie, you know, and because that would have produced a different result. And that's probably what I should have done. But to get the quickest result, right? Just make movie after movie after movie. But what I did was hone my skills and learn like cinematography, sound. Everything, just everything about film directing, and did it through corporate videos, commercials, and music videos. And then even though I should have started filming feature films right when I quit my job, I waited 8 years and filmed all this other stuff. It really showed up in the end product. Like this does not, like the first thing people say, like, yeah, this doesn't look like your first feature film. Look like you've been doing this forever. And it's just like, it looks like a $1 million budget, like when you look at the film. And so basically we're just trying to raise some, like $10,000 more basically to get the color correction down and sound design and actually looking more for like an investor. We put up a Kickstarter, try to raise the funds, and that's going decent. And it's just really, we'd rather someone just step in and they're going to get a huge return because like the film's only $50,000. So a $10,000 investment is huge. And there's just so much plus to it because it's not a big risk, you know, for producers and distribution to pick up a film that's been made for $50,000. It's not a couple $100,000.
Peanuts.
You know?
And no, then what do you take it to the film festivals and that's the next step?
Yeah, we'll take it to a bunch of film festivals and it's going to get picked up at film festivals and someone's going to buy it and it'll get like some distribution either like on Netflix, Hulu or something like that, or take it to a foreign market, just get it in as many places as possible. But I'm 100% confident that it's going to get picked up by someone, you know, and everyone's going to get their money back at least 4 to 5 times their money back. But it's just like, I've been, you know, I do everything by myself in that sense, you know, like I take time doing things and I want to master every little area and it takes longer, but it definitely works off in the end. But I have to wear these different hats, you know, I have to raise money for a bit. Oh, go direct for a bit. Go edit for a bit, you know?
Totally.
So
I can relate. I do the same thing in my business. I have to learn how to, you know, build a website without knowing code.
Yeah.
And coach and, you know, sell and market and blah, 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 right? But if you don't know something, if you know, my theory is you have to know at least enough to be competent so you can't get kind of ripped off. You know, like if you know nothing about marketing and you just hire someone to do your marketing, that'll never work. Because, it's just different goals and it's just too easy to not know who you're going to hire, not know if they're doing the right work for you, bad fit, blah, blah, blah. So it sounds like that's a similar situation that you have in the film business, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. So, and like I said, yeah, we're looking for $10,000. We're willing to give someone 5% of all profits of the film. And then whoever invests the $10,000, your money will be paid back first with any money that comes to the film. And yeah, it's just, to me, it's a no-brainer. Go check out the trailer. Like,
Where can they find it?
I have it up on a Kickstarter. Do you have anywhere where people can go to Kickstarter.com and just search Seven Devils?
I'll put up a link in the, the podcast as well.
That's perfect.
Seven devils. Is it seven the number, or you write out seven?
Yep.
Okay.
No, the number. You actually spell it out. Seven devils.
Very cool. Now, I ask everyone who comes on the podcast, since it's called the Leverage Podcast, and the idea of leverage is, the definition anyways, is the exertion of force by means of a lever. So it's doing a little bit of work to get a much bigger payout or result. So I like to ask everyone, what is kind of the biggest thing that you've seen in your life that you've been able to leverage, or the biggest leverage point? It could be anything. It's kind of a broad question, but does anything come to mind for that?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Never been asked that.
Could be even something small. Like, hey, I learned this one thing and it exploded this area of my life, for example.
Yes. I would just say the biggest leverage is direct action. Like, if you want to be a great hockey player, go put on some skates and play hockey. If you want to get good at women, like talking to women, go talk to women. That's all I could say, really. If you want to get good at making films, go make some films.
So don't buy the make film ebook. Just go.
No, fuck that. Seriously.
Don't buy the ebook on how to play hockey.
No, yeah, exactly. Pick up a stick and play, and that's like your direct action. Like, sure, like learning should be like, I'd say 5%. You know, like right. You can pick up a book here and there and stuff like that, and
because you're gonna learn as you go, and you're gonna have natural questions that come up and sticking points, and that's when you maybe stop and you get some coaching or you read something on it. But until then, I agree completely.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, okay, if you, like, the, most of your guys want to get better at approaching and talking to women so they can have successful relationships, like, you do not need to, like, read 100 books on that. You know, go approach some women and then, yes, come to Robbie and ask Robbie, what am I doing wrong? Don't come back and ask Robbie what's wrong until you've done what he said he's told you to do. You know, like,
I went through my mind. I did 100 approaches in my mind, and I got rejected by 9 of them. And I fucked the rest of the 91, but, you know, how do I fuck those other 9? I've gotten shit like that before. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
literally someone said that to you.
Not that exaggerated, like, but, you know, I did.
But they went through it in their mind.
Yeah. You know, and they're like, I really want to work on my inner game. So, you know, I need to feel like if I haven't gotten the number or at least closed all of them, then I shouldn't do it.
Got it. So now I'm interested. What have been some of the biggest leverage answers, like, that you've heard, like the best?
A lot of them have been a little bit more geared towards a specific situation. Like, for example, using a hack or like an app like Airbnb to create a bunch of extra money, you know, when you're tight for cash, you want to rent out your apartment and go live somewhere else.
Or like having a gun when asking for money, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, exactly. That makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, the answers range is a very broad question. So.
Got it. Yeah. I'll have to listen to more then, because I want to hear these. That's a great question.
I just started asking it not too long ago. Maybe you're like the 10th guest I've asked. Eventually, I'll compile just a whole show on just people's answers. That could be cool.
Well, that's awesome, man. So, when do you get back to the States?
It's a very good question. I might just live in Ukraine for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've got my dog over here. He's an emotional support dog, so I figured out a way to fly him internationally.
Nice.
He's been to 5 countries this summer. So not bad for good old Wiley. And I work from my computer, and the best place that I can actually coach clients is over here in Eastern Europe.
Wow.
There's just so many girls to approach. They're a lot more attractive over here, and you know, they're harsh, so they'll give it to you straight. And you won't get the pity number, you won't get the, oh, I'm kind of seeing someone, you'll get the, why are you talking to me? Fuck off. Or, okay, we go for coffee. Why not?
So, yeah, just direct, huh?
Yeah, it's really great to help guys. And, you know, it can be really confusing to a lot of guys in Western cultures, because we don't know when we're being rejected or not a lot of the time. So we'll end up in the friend zone for years or crazy situations like that. We're like, oh no, we're good. You know, we've gone on 19 dates. I haven't kissed her yet, but you know, I think we're in love. And it's like, bro, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But that happened to me when I was a young guy. So,
I got one more leverage thing.
Yeah.
I think this is better. Fucking persistence, man. Like, no matter what it is, I swear, you can be hearing no 100 times, but if you have persistence and just keep going after something, that's the best, like, leverage tool. Like, again, my girlfriend right now, like, after we went out on a couple dates, I turned into, like, a dickhead, completely screwed up the whole thing. Literally, I did.
Yeah.
And she was, like, she pretty much told me to fuck off, like, and didn't talk to me for, like, weeks. And,
I have an idea of what happened, but we don't have to go.
Yeah. But like persistence, like I kept coming after persistence. So whatever is important to you, like don't like quit on it. Like it will happen. Like just see it to the end, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so I think that's one of the best leverage tools out there is your persistence. And, but don't bullshit yourself, you know, like be taking action. You can't just be sitting on the couch and calling that persistence, you know, and dreaming of it.
Exactly. Well, I mean, if you're doing the two things you mentioned, taking action and then persistence on that action, you know, eventually you're going to figure it out. It's pretty hard to, you know, or you'll figure out to do something else completely, but I like it. It's great. So, dude, thanks so much for coming on. It's been a fucking great episode. I've learned a ton, and I wouldn't be surprised if you'll be getting a call from me telling you about my Vipassana experience.
Awesome.
In the next few months or so, whenever I come back to the U.S. Although they do have it internationally, right?
Yeah, they have quite a few in Europe. They have them even in Spain in like Barcelona. Like that'd be pretty amazing.
Oh wow!
Be able to go do it in Barcelona.
That would be cool.
So.
I don't know what I'd do with Wiley. Maybe he can meditate alongside me. They allow dogs in there.
Oh, that's true. if it's an emotional support dog, maybe. I don't know.
He'll just sit there.
I'm not sure. I've never asked that.
I can figure that out. That's easy. But yeah, if anyone has any questions for you, is there any way people can contact you?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, my site's just GordonCowie.com. My email's on there, gordon@gordoncowie.com. And then if you want to check out the trailer again, just go to Kickstarter, type in Seven Devils. And yeah, just go to my website and you'll be able to find my contact information there. And feel free to contact me about anything, the meditation or just anything you heard me talk about. I'm always willing to answer questions.
Awesome. Thanks for giving the listeners that opportunity.
Yeah.
So been fucking awesome to have you on. And looking forward to, you know, seeing what happens with your movie.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Enjoy Ukraine, man. And we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.